Okay, we're beginning here at the bottom of Tzadik Gimel Medved by the Gemara, where it says, "B'mayka miflige." What are the Tanakama and Benanas arguing about in the Mishnah with regards to the fourth woman? Does she have to take a shvuah? Does she not have to take a shvuah? Amar Shmuel, gon shenibseit achat mehen sadeh she'eno shelo. It's an instance where one of the women finds out that the field that she has didn't belong to him, and there was actually a stolen field. So here you have three women who already took their possession of their field in order to pay for their ketubot. And then one of these women finds out all of a sudden that this field didn't belong to her husband. And now she's out the money, out the ketubah that she was supposed to receive. Ubebal chov me'uchar shekadam v'gava kamiflege. And their argument is in a case where a later creditor went ahead and grabbed collateral or took payment on their debt. Tanakama savar, mashagava lo gava. Tanakama believes that whatever they took isn't relevant. The order of the creditors matters. And if you are a later creditor and you jump the line, we're going to take the property back and give it to those that are earlier on the line. So in this instance where it happened unbeknownst to the parties, which is that each one of the four wives took payment on their tubot, and then all of a sudden we realize that one of these women didn't have land that was really his, so they're out their tuba. But meantime, number four took her land already. She's the last of the creditors, and she's already taken her land. So what the Tanakama says is she's going to lose that. We're going to pull that land away from her, and we're going to move it up to a creditor that's earlier in the line. So because of that, she will not maintain the land at the expense of the other creditors. Because that's the case, she doesn't have to take a shvuah, because she'll never keep land instead of one of the earlier creditors. So she has no need to take a shvuah. If anything happens, we're going to go get the land and take it back anyway and give it to an earlier creditor. Each one of the earlier women has someone after them that they have to take a shvuah, because that person wants the residual of whatever that woman has. Number four is nobody's going to get a residual after her because she's not going to keep anything. If one of the earlier creditors lost out, we're going to move all the collateral up the line and she will always be the last in line. Benana savar, mashigava gava. On the other hand, Benana says if you're a later creditor and you jumped the line and you took something, you can keep it. So in this case, again, unintentionally, the woman, number four, who takes the land at that point, she was the last in line, she took the land last, but then one of them finds out that their land wasn't really the land of her husband. So now she wants to get land, but she can't get it because number four took it already. And therefore, number four could actually precede one of the other creditors. Not intentionally, but the unintentional consequence of one of the other parties losing their land is that now number four creditor is actually getting before one of the earlier creditors. So we wanted to take a shvuah, because there's a possibility that somebody will be, quote-unquote, collecting after her. So, Rav Nachman Amar Rabba Baravua, Dukuli Alma, Mashigava, Lo Gava. Rav Nachman says, that's not the case. Whatever the later creditor takes doesn't matter. We're going to push it up the line. Earlier creditors always get precedence. Va, Bechayshina, Shema, Taksif, Kamiflege. And they're arguing about here is whether she will be detrimental to the property that she takes. Mar Savar Chashina and Shema Tachsif. One of them holds that we do worry about the fact that she will ruin the land. Mar Savar Lo Chashina and Shema Tachsif. And one of them holds that we do not worry about her hurting the land. Because she's at the end of the line, she's the last of the creditors, what we're afraid of is that she will, when she gets a piece of land, basically raid the land or do her utmost to take everything out of the land before it disappears from her. She always knows that there's a risk that she might lose this land because the earlier women, if anything happens to their land, they're going to come after her and take her land. So she wants to maximize her profit output in the short time that she might have the land. And therefore, we're worried about her behavior vis-a-vis the land. So we ask her to take a shvuah. The way Rashi describes it over here is that tichazik lo mashbinin la, because if she doesn't take a shvuah, yada dehadra shlishit ilava. So because she thinks that if I don't take a shvuah, then number three is going to come and take my land. When she loses out, whatever she has, they're going to come back after me. And therefore, she doesn't take so seriously her necessity to take care of the land. She just takes everything out and eats away. So now, Ben Nana says, if we force her to take a shvuah, she will think that she is able to keep the land now because she's taking a shvuah. So she will take it much more seriously. Because she's taking it more seriously, she'll take care of the land, thinking that just like the other three parties took a shvuah, so too, she's taking a shvuah. So just like they won't lose their land, so too I won't lose my land, therefore she'll take care of it. Tanakhama says that's not a reason to take a shvuah. That's not going to make a difference over here. Number four, she could lose her land anyway, because Mashe Gava Lo Gava. So if the earlier ones lose it, we would move up the collateral to the earlier women. And taking a shvuah is not going to change that. We take a shvuah because we want to know that you're not withholding something. We want to know that you left some residual behind. But for someone to take more seriously their responsibilities vis-a-vis the karka, shvuah is just not a way. It's not a reason to take a shvuah, and a shvuah is not necessarily going to solve that problem. The Nanas thinks that by having her take a shvuah, she'll take it much more seriously. That's the way Rashi learns. The Ramban notes that Rashi's explanation is somewhat difficult because, again, the shvuah is precipitated here in order to engender within her a certain relationship with the property, but it's not because the shvuah itself is doing anything. The shvuah itself is not for anyone after her. It's not to check that she didn't take anything extra. It's simply to have her take more seriously her responsibilities vis-a-vis the land. And that's not a reason to take a shvuah, and it's not necessarily going to result in the outcome that you want. So therefore, the Ramban takes a slightly different approach than Rashi, and suggests here that the shvuah is intended that she can actually take the property up front. The reason we ask her to take a shvuah here is because otherwise the three other women might be able to stop her from collecting her property, based on the safek that maybe in the future they'd actually take the property back from there because they are priority creditors. And in the meantime, she's going to ruin the property. So they make her take a shvuah in order that she can actually take the property up front. And then we assume she won't ruin the property since she's taken the shvuah and assumes that it's going to be hers. And if they have to collect it later, they'll collect it, but they cannot be ma'akev. They can't stop her from taking the property up front. Vayamar. The Abai Kshisha Ikebenayu. Abai suggests another alternative as to what the nafka mina between the Tanakama and Benanas is. The Tanya Abai Kshisha, the elder Abai, says, Yitomim Shamru Gudolim Bein Zarech Lomar Ktanim. When we have the Takanat Chachamim, that Lo Tipara Mi Yitomim Ela Bishvuah, that a creditor who comes to collect from the estate of Yitomim has to take a Shvuah, you're not allowed to collect without a Shvuah. Rabbi Kshisha, the elder Abayi, says that applies to Yitomim who are of age, and certainly applies to Yitomim who are minors. Tanakama, lately the Abayi Kshisha, the Tanakama does not subscribe to that position of the elder Abayi, and therefore he only requires a shvuah when you collect from the property of the Yitomim, when the Yitomim are ktanim. But if the Yitomim are gdolim, you do not require a shvuah to take from the property of the Yitomim. Number four, the only one behind her, or the residual that she leaves behind, will fall to the Yitomim. So as far as the first three women, they're taking a shvuah because there's a woman behind them. And they take a shvuah that didn't withhold and hurt the creditor behind them. The last woman is not hurting any creditors because she's the last of the creditors. Who she ends up taking the property from is the estate or the Yitomim. So basically the Tanakama believes that you only need such a shvuah to collect from Yitomim when the Yitomim are ktanim. But if the Yitomim are of age already, you don't need to take a shvuah. On the other hand, Benanas, itlei de abayik shisha. Benanas holds of abayik shisha, and therefore, he says you take a shvuah, whether it's ktanim or gidolim. So in the instance of our Mishnah, we're talking about Yitomim gidolim. The Tanakhama says there's no need for a shvuah to collect from Yitomim gidolim. That's why number four doesn't take a shvuah. Benanas says, even from Yitomim Gdolim, like Abayi Kshisha, you have to take a shvuah, and therefore number four has to take a shvuah because she's collecting from the estate. Oh, as to why? It depends where the takana was instituted. Was the takana instituted for tanim, who don't have the ability to protect themselves or make claims against the other individual? So therefore we impose the shvuah to ensure. But in the case of gdolim, where they have a better idea of what's going on, and they know what claims to make, or they have a sense of how to respond to the collection, maybe over there we don't require a shvuah if it's a creditor that's coming in. I assume that's the logic behind the difference between them. Amar Rav Huna, Hani Trei Achei, Utrei Shutafei. If you have two brothers or two partners, either or, it's not the same group of individuals, but partners. Dilu Dina Bahadechad. And they have an adjudication, a litigation with another party. So you have one of the partners in a partnership that is litigating with another party. Vazochad Minayu Bahade Ladina. And then one of them ends up adjudicating the case on behalf of the partnership, in a sense. Lo Matzi Idach Lamei Marlei. At la baldarim didi at ela shluchute avad. The other partner can't say, well, yes, you litigated with my partner, and whatever the decision was in that case, that has no relevance to me. You want to litigate? You litigate with me independently from the other party. In that case, we say, no go. Say that, why should this person have to litigate again? When he litigated with your partner, he was acting on behalf of the partnership. And if you wanted to join, you had to join that case. The fact that you didn't bother to show up for that case, you lose out. In the modern law system, I think it's called the privy, that you have a right to assign the decision from the first person that you adjudicated with in the partnership to the other one, because the cases are so close, or it's so obvious, that if you wanted to litigate, you should have showed up at that point, because there's no reason to force the person to litigate with every partner separately rather than with the partnership as a whole or with one of the parties of the partnership. Ikla Rav Nachman the Surah. Rav Nachman went to Surah, Shalui hi ki hagavna. Mai. They asked him, in this instance, what's the din? Amalu, he said to them, Matznitin, hi, it's our Mishnah. Harishona nishbet lishniya. The first woman takes a shvua to the second woman. Vishniyal shlishit, the second woman to the third woman. Ushlishit l'revit, and the third woman to the fourth woman. V'ilu rishona l'shlishit loktani. We don't force the first woman to take a shvua to the third woman. So even though after the first woman, there's a second woman who's a creditor and a third woman who's a creditor. They're both creditors after her, and they both want to know that she didn't take extra, because it affects both of them. Yet when number one takes a shvua woman number two, we assume that that shvuah is good for number two, and is also good for number three. We don't make her take a separate shvuah for each party that's after her. My taima, what's the reasoning? La mishum dishluchuta avdo. That in the case, number two was not only acting on behalf of herself, but she was also acting on behalf of all the parties that came after her. So it's the equivalent of a partnership in which one party litigated, or here, demanded a shvuah. The shvua is good for all of the parties afterwards. Gemara says, "Mi domi, how can you compare the cases?" Hotam shvua lechad ushvua lemeya. The famous expression, ner lechad ner lemeya. Candle for one is a candle for 100. Doesn't matter. You don't need another candle. Everybody can benefit from the light of one candle. It doesn't diminish because more people utilize the light. Right, so too over here. If she's taking a shvua, why does it matter if she takes a shvua to number two or to number three? It's the same shvua, which is I didn't withhold anything. There's no difference in her shvua, whether it's party number one, two, three, or four that's asking her for the shvua. Hocha amar ilu ana havai. Here, in this case, by the partnership, the other partner can say, if I was present, t'inono tfei, I would have had better claims. I would have made better arguments in this case. I could have come up with a better stance for the position of the partnership. V'lo Amran, the Gemara says, we don't say this, ela delo ite bimato. That's only if he's not in the city. Ela ite bimato, ibeilele de mete. So the Gemara qualifies this in the end. It says that maybe in the case of a partnership, you do have a right to litigate separately. The Gemara says that's only in a case where you cannot join the case. In a case where you didn't know about the litigation, or a case that it wasn't so easy for you to be there for the litigation, then we say you can adjudicate or litigate separately each person in the partnership. because there was no way for you to know or to join the case. But in an instance where you're in the city and the case is going on, if you didn't show up, you lost. So it's a middle position which says, yes, we're not going to force the parties to litigate twice or a party to litigate each of the partners of the partnership. But that all assumes that each of the partners is aware of the litigation and can attend the litigation. If one of the partners can't attend the litigation, we can't say, oh, too bad, your partner litigated already. No, we have to give them a fair chance to litigate. But we're not going to make it impossible for the person coming to litigate with them. And if he can get the attention of all the partners, then if he only litigated with one of the partners, that will suffice. Ke'itmar bet shtarot ayotzim b'yom echad. You have two shtarot that are pulled out on a single day. Rav amar chokim. Rav says they divide it. It's mamona mutab safek. We divide it. Shmuel amar shuda d'dayne. It's up to the dayanim. Now we saw earlier shuda d'dayne. Rashi doesn't say it here in the first instance, which is the free road inei dayanim. It's up to the dayanim, making it sound like it's really up to them, whatever they want to do. But that is not Rashi shita. We saw that back on Pehei Amud Bet, and on Tzadi Dalet Amud Bet also, we're going to see, you can see that Rashi doesn't say that. Rashi says that the judges have to make the best judgment they can in this case. They have to try to figure out who was the more likely party to receive it first. In this case, it makes a difference as to who gets it. Because they have the same date in the shtar, there's no evidence in front of us that could tell us, but it's plausible that the person wanted or liked was trying to gift someone more than the other. And the judges have to basically try to figure that out. We try to figure out what was the intent of the grantor over here. And we divide it that way. Tosafot, both here and back on Pehei Amud Bet, says shuda d'dayne means it's up to the dayanim. They can do as they please. And Tosafot actually makes a statement here is because there's no possibility of them ever coming to a conclusion. There's no more evidence that they could bring. By the mere fact that it's dated on the same day means that no matter what more information that you get, you'll never be able to determine what was the intent of the granting party over here. So therefore, it's up to the dayanim to do as they please. Lema, Rav Damak, Rabbi Meir. Let us suggest over here the machlok between Rav and Shmuel is actually similar to another machlok of Tanaim that we know, which is that Rav subscribes to the position of Rabbi Meir, that Amar Edecha Tima Karte, that the Edim that sign on the contract, they are what puts the contract into force, and the contract is good even without the Ede Mesira. Those Edim that see it being given to the other party are not the witnesses that make the Kinyan effective. It's made effective by the Edim that are on the contract itself. Ushmol Amar, Ushmol Damak Rabbi Elazar. And Shmuel subscribes to the position of Rabbi Elazar, Damar Edei Mesira Karti, that the Edim that witness the granting of the document to the other party, they are the ones that really effectuate the Kinyan. The Edim are just on the contract for Tikkun Olam, so that we have a way to get people who know what happened, or we have some sort of evidence to see that it's documented for a Raya, but it's not that they are the ones that made it effective. In terms of Rav's position, Rav says chokim. They divide it up. Because this is an impossible situation. If edei chatima arkarte, Rashi says then, hilkach mai shuda d'dayne ikilameimar. There's no point of a shuda d'dayne, the way that Rashi describes shuda d'dayne, which is the dayanim are going to try to figure out who really got it first or who deserved to get it first. But over here, where the edei chatima arkarte, that according to Rashi, it says, you can't make one party have a better situation than the other party, because they basically signed on the same day, and they might even have signed simultaneously. So there's a possibility here where you would never be able to get information that would be worth it through the dining. On the other hand, Shmuel, holds like Rabbi Elazar, that Edei Nesira Karte, then it doesn't matter that the contracts are dated at the same time.
Right.
It does matter because the Mesira could have happened at separate times, even earlier in the day, later in the day. And that means that the effectiveness of the contract actually could be differentiated. And since it could be differentiated, maybe intended to give it to one party first, and the second party was just playing around with it. He wasn't really giving them a contract. So because of that, Shema echad haya chaviv alav yoter. In this case, maybe one of them was more beloved, or he liked better. V'kadamu misarolo. And he granted to him first. V'cheini hita. And the second one, he's tricking. V'chilo yadinan, neima shudid d'dayne. And here, where we don't know, let the dayanim investigate it and come to a conclusion. Fim hashem roim, mehem haya ragilet lo yoter. Which one of the two parties makes more sense that he was granting such a gift to? The shuda adifa mechaluka. Because shuda is better than division. Division is a default, which is we don't know what to do, and there's no way for us to determine, so we divide it. Whereas shuda is really a clarification of the situation. We're trying to make a determination as to who really deserves this, and therefore we are deciding to clarify what the actual outcome will be. Chaluka is simply the default because we don't know what to do. Shuda Daina says we do have the ability to know what to do. And that would be the difference, according to Rashi, between Rav holding like Rabbi Meir and Shmuel holding like Rabbi Elazar, as to whether there can be a differentiation in the timing of the granting of this gift. As Rashi explains over here, we're talking about the sale of a single piece of property to two parties. They both show up here with a contract that says that they bought the same piece of property from the same individual, dated the same day. So now we have to determine who gets the property. In the case of Eidei Chatima Karte, we're going to say that there's no way for us to determine who came first. Therefore, you're going to split the property. On the other hand, by the case of Eidei Mesira Karte, there is reason to believe that there was a differentiation between the parties, because it's not just about the dating and the signing of the contract, it's about when it was given. If we could determine who got it first, or who would be more likely to get it first, over there there's a reason to make a decision to grant it to one of the two parties. So Tosfot over here says, Lema Rav Damak Rabbi Meir, Hilkach, Konim Shnehem Bevat Achat. They both acquired it simultaneously. Afilu Nichtav V'Nechtam V'Nimtzar L'Achad Tchila. Even though it was written, signed, and granted to one of the parties first. And then the second party had his signed and given over to the other party. Avo bish mitoch eidei misira nikar delo chashivlei eidei misira ikar. Even though from the eidei misira it seems obvious that he granted it to one party before the other, nevertheless, since the eidei misira are irrelevant, therefore it doesn't matter. That gives us no evidence. Doesn't give us any more information. And then he says, v'nira d'lorabi d'mayri hocha b'matana u'mecher b'makom shekotvim et ashtar. That's a case here where we're talking about a gift or a sale in a place where they write the shtar. The makom shein kotvim, shakarka nikneh b'kesef u'b'chazaka u'b'chalipin, in a case of a shtar, eino omeid elo l'raya. Must be a case where the shtar is acting as the vehicle for acquisition, even though they paid money already. Like we mentioned before, in a place where they normally write a shtar, and that's the final kinyan, not the moving of the kesef. That must be the situation here. Because if you tell me that the shtar here is simply an evidentiary document, then the shtar itself was not what effectuated the kinyan. So then, hatam kuli alma modu damin and shuda. In that case, everybody would say shuda, because then you go look at when the kinyan took place, not when the shtar was written or the chatimat shtar. That's not so relevant. The shtar is simply an evidentiary document. It's not the document that effectuated the kinyan. So over there, there could be differentiation. Therefore, it must be talking about a place where the shtar is the effectuation of the kinyan. Rabbeinu Tam mefarish, ha milta binyan echer. On the other hand, Rabbeinu Tam explains things a little differently. And he says, it's a case here, machasa de l'achat mishnei bnei adam, echad ikar. In one case, one of them is the primary recipient. Aval shnei shtarot, sheshnei balei chuvin, chokim l'kulei ama. It's a differentiation here between a sale, where he sold it to one party and then to another party. Then he really intended to sell it to one party primarily, because you can't sell the plan twice. And we can figure out who was the one that was the ikar. But in a case of two shtarot, of two creditors, there everybody's going to agree that they're cholek. Because there's no reason to believe that one of the creditors has more rights or primary rights over another creditor. So in the case of creditors, they will always be equal partners. Over here, there's no shudid d'dayne. Because since the debt was incurred on the same day, they have equal rights. There's no way to determine who went first. If that's the case, then they're going to split it between them as creditors. In the case of a sale, there you can discuss the possibility that even though it's dated on the same day, that there was someone who was the primary recipient. Ubal korchach, shukulan yotzim b'yom echad, v'tayim v'nishneihem emet. By the creditors, they're both right. There's no reason to believe that one has precedence over the other, and therefore they'll split it. On the other hand, leim arav damar k'rabi meir is that edei chatim akarte. V'efshar d'nechtam b'vat achat. It's a possibility that they were signed simultaneously. What the Rabbeinu Tam says is not like Rashi says, which we're not going to be able to determine, but rather there's a plausibility that these were really simultaneous. Whether it is that the Edim were the same Edim on both Shtarot, and therefore they signed them simultaneously, or they said they won't go effect till we are done with both of them, or you have two sets of Edim, one for each contract, and they sign at the same time. So there is a possibility or plausibility that it actually was simultaneous. And therefore Rav says, Chokim. So vein dato klal, kishamorse lechem, afilu bezer chazeh, shiknei achad yoter michavero. And therefore, when he gives it over later, even if he gives it in a different order, I mean, he gives it one and then he gives it to the other, that has no impact. But his intent was that they both get the kinyan simultaneously. It's equivalent. It is equivalent of him granting it to both of them simultaneously. Even if one of them was signed earlier than the other, that wasn't his intent. His intent is that they both work at the same time. On the other hand, Shmuel holds like Rabbi Elazar that says, Eidei Misira Karte. And since the shtar left the hand of the seller for one of them before the other, if he made it or intentionally separated the granting of the contract from one party to the other, over there there's a reason to believe that he did it for a purpose, or that he had a reason to do it. Because you can have the shtar written even when the lokeach is not there. So the mocher has the shtar. The fact that he granted one shtar before the other means that he really wants to determine. So he says, v'yevshar lefi anyan liot b'vat achat. Imar itrame lo'otos zacha. You can't say, or it's impossible over here to say that it happened simultaneously. Aval b'makom shecholim liskot shneem b'vat achat. But in a case where you can grant them the right simultaneously, inami bet bali chubim b'yom echad. Or it's a case of creditors on a single day, which are equivalent to creditors because of chayin. In that case, they divide it up. By the balei chovin, even though it could have been at a separate time, we worry about nila delet. Therefore, we grant both creditors similar rights. And same too by ketubat isha, we grant both of them the similar rights because of chayin. And in the case where they could have actually taken it simultaneously, over there we'll say yachloku. In the case where the mesira is the differentiating property, and therefore if he wanted to give it simultaneously, he would have given it simultaneously. The fact that he handed it to them differently means that he didn't intend to give it to them simultaneously, and therefore shuda d'dinei is going to be the determining factor here, not the yachloku. Yachloku, again, is only in a case where it's plausible that it was non-differentiated there, kinyan. So that's the way Rabbeinu Tam explains it. And therefore, Rabbeinu Tam, the focus is on the ability to have these be simultaneous or not be simultaneous. If, in all likelihood, it was simultaneous, and that's why the kinyan was done in such a manner, then we will just split it. If the kinyan comes through a methodology, which, in all likelihood, is to separate between the kinyanim, then in that case, we're going to determine through Shuda the Dine. The Gemara says, lo, Dutkuli Alma ki Rabbi Elazar. Everybody holds like it Rabbi Elazar, especially since the halacha is like him. So we prefer that Rav and Shmuel are according to Rabbi Elazar, which is Ede Misira Karte. V'chalcha b'haka miflagei. This is the machlok between Rav and Shmuel. Rav Savar, Chaluka Adifa. Shmuel Savar, Shuda the Dine Adifa. Question is, which is a better methodology for dealing with such a situation? Rav says chaluka is a better way to deal with it, whereas Shmuel says da'ishu de da'inei adifa. And the Rosh over here explains that their machloket is really about which is a better solution to get it to the right party. Is it better to do chaluka, division of the property, because then at least the one who deserved it got some of the money. Or are we better off doing shuda dinei, because if we look into the matter, in all likelihood, we'll get it to the right person, and we'll get it to 100% to the right person, rather than ensuring that the right person loses at least 50% of what they're entitled to. Umi matzid mukman kdei the Rav ki Rabbi Elazar. And can Rav really hold like Rabbi Elazar? V'amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Rav, aloha ki Rabbi Elazar begitin. The aloha is like Rabbi Elazar by gitin, implying that not so by other contracts, which is what we're discussing over here. Kamrita kamei de Shmuel. When they sit over this before Shmuel, Rabbi Yehuda was a Talmud of both Rav and Shmuel. Amar af bishtarot. Shmuel says that not only is the aloha like Rabbi Elazar by gitin, but it's also by shtarot. Michlal, the Rav savar bishtarot lo. That by shtarot, it's not the case. If that's true, then Rav can't be setting himself up by shtarot to follow that position of Rabbi Elazar. Hello, mechavarta. Makes more sense to say, like we said before, which is Rav ki Rabbi Meir. Rav is like Rabbi Meir by other shtarot besides gitin. Shmuel ki Rabbi Elazar. And Shmuel holds like Rabbi Elazar by other shtarot, like we suggested before, the differentiation between the two positions. Then the Gemara says, Mei Tevei, Shnei shtarot hayotzim biyom echad, chokim. If two shtarot that come out on a similar day, they split it. Tiyuvta de Shmuel. That's a strong refutation of Shmuel's position. Here you have a straight out statement that two shtarot dated on the same day are cholek. Amalacha Shmuel, Hamani, Rabbi Meir, that's not a problem. That position is authored by Rabbi Meir. Vana, Damrei, Rabbi Elazar, and I hold like Rabbi Elazar. E, Rabbi Meir. If it's really Rabbi Meir who's the author of this position, name a Seifa. What are you going to do with the Seifa? Kotov Lechad, Umasar Lechad. He wrote to one of them, and then gave it over to another. Zesha Masar Lo, Kana. The one who received it is Koneh. Implying that Mesira is what effectuates the Kinyan and not the Ktiva. V'i Rabbi Meir, Amai Kana. Amar Ede Chatima Karte. According to Rabbi Meir, it's the Ede Chatima, not the Ede Mesira. So obviously in this case, it's according to Rabbi Elazar who says that Ede Mesira Karte. And even though in other places in Shas we say that when the Edim are Chutim, they sign on the contract, they effectuate the Kinyan, even according to Rabbi Elazar, Tosafot here qualifies that and says that's only true when there are different dates on the shtarot. If there are different dates on the shtarot, then if one is signed earlier and then the second one is given later, then we say that the first one has precedence because it was signed on that date and that effectuated the kinyan. But in a case where they both have the same dating on them, one was effectuated by the signing of the edim, the other one was effectuated by the granting of the mesira, they will give precedence to the mesira. Because since they are both dated on the same day, there is no way that we can know through the signatures of the contract as to which one of them was first. Tanaehi. It actually is a machloket tanaim. Titanya. Machamim omrim yachloko. Chamim say you divide it. V'kan amru mashiirtze ashlish yaseh. But here in Bavel, they actually said that whatever the escrow agent wants to do, he can do it. Meaning, it's equivalent of a shuda d'dayne. And so therefore, what Shmuel says in the end is that this is a machloket tanaim as to which takes precedence in these cases. Is it the shuda d'dayne? Or is it yachloku? So you're right. What you have there in the Tanakamo is that he thinks yachloku is the better solution to such a problem or such a question. Whereas the other party in Bavel, disagree and say shuda d'dayne. The case here is a case where a person sends a gift to a recipient through an agent. The agent gets there, and the person has passed away already. So he returns back to the sender of the gift, and by the time he gets back there, the sender has also passed away. So now you have your shim, basically, that are fighting over this gift. What was the intent of the gifter? Was the intent of the gift to only give it to the party themselves, or even to their yorshim? So now, obviously the yorshim of the recipient say he intended for us, our father plus us, and the grantor of the gift says, no, he only intended for your father. Your father's not there, it belongs to us. So, yachloku. That's what the chachamim say, which means that chiluk is the better option in these types of cases of sveikot. Here we can't determine. On the other hand, in Bavel it says, the shliach, the proxy that was sent, gets to decide whether he should give it to the recipient's Yerushim or to the grantor's Yerushim, or the equivalent basically of Shuda the Dainin. So here you have a machloka tanaim as to what is better. Is Shuda the Dainin the better option, or is Yachloku the better option? So you quoted me, Meitavei, this question about Shnei Yitzharavot Yotzim B'Yom Echad Chokim, which makes it sound like Rav's position. That is the position of the Chachamim. But there is another position there that says that Shuda the Dainin is the better option in that case. And I hold like that other party, not like the Chachamim, but rather like the other party that says, Mashirtzeh Shlish Yaseh. Alright, Eime Derami Bar Chama, the mother of Rami Bar Chama, Katavtinu Lenichsa Lerami Bar Chama Betzafra. In the morning, she wrote all of her possessions over to her son, Rami Bar Chama. Lo'orta, in the evening, in the afternoon, Katvininu the Marukva Bar Chama. She wrote it all to his brother. Ata Rami Bar Chama, the Kameda Rav Sheshet. So Rami Bar Chama comes before Rav Sheshet. Ukmei Benichsa. He granted him the right to take the property. Ata Marukva, the Kameda Rav Nachman. Marukva goes to Rav Nachman. Ukmei Benichsa. He granted him the right. So Rav Sheshet says the party who got it first is the one who gets to keep it. Therefore, Rami Bar Chama is entitled to it. Nachman says no. The second party is the recipient, and therefore Marukva is entitled to it. Ata Rav Sheshet, the Kameda Rav Nachman. So okay, to solve the problem, the two judges get together here. Rav Sheshet comes to Rav Nachman. Well, hey, my time of it, Marachi. He says to Rav Nachman, what are you doing? I'm like, well, my time of it, Marachi. What do you mean, what am I doing? What are you doing, Rav Sheshet? I'm like, the Kadim. Sheshet says, I'm pretty clear what I'm doing. He was first. He had precedence on the day. He was granted it in the morning, and the other party was granted it in the afternoon or the evening. Amalei, so Rav Nachman says back to him, Atub Yushalayim Yatvinan? Do we live in Yushalayim, the Katvinan Shalt, that we differentiate in the time? Our Shtarot don't have hours in them. Our Shtarot only have a date in them. That means that we don't differentiate between which one was earlier, which one's later. The date makes it that as if it's on the same day. Ella, Mar, my time of it, Hachi. So then Rav Sheshet says back to Rav Nachman, okay, you think I'm wrong because there's no dating or hours in there, then why did you grant it to Marukva? If you're telling me now there's no differentiation between the contracts, that means that either party could have gotten it. Why did you favor Marukva? I'm like, Shuda D'Dainai. Nachman said, that's the din here. The din is Shuda D'Dainai. I decided that Marukva is the proper recipient. Now, according to Tosafot, that means that's what he decided. According to Rashi, it means that he felt that Marukva was the more likely recipient or had a close relationship with the mother. It would make more sense that he was the recipient. So Amalei, so Rosh Hashanah says, well, if that's the case, Ananami Shuda D'Dainai. I also granted it through Shuda D'Dainai. If you have Shuda D'Dainai, I can have Shuda D'Dainai, so I made a decision also. So Amalei, so Rav Nachman says back to Rosh Hashanah, two reasons you're wrong. Chada, da'ana daino, I'm a dayan, umar lav dayano, and you're not a dayan. I have permission to adjudicate from the Reish Galuta. You don't have permission. So I'm a dayan and you're not a dayan. I have proper authorization and therefore my decisions are going to carry more weight than you. And we know that from other places, Rav Nachman's not only decisions, but his statements in the Gemara carry extra weight because of the fact that he's a dayan. Vote. Mikar la b'torat achi atit lo. And number two is, you're saying that after the fact. You did not grant it to Rami Bar Chama because of Shuda D'Dainai. You granted it to him thinking that he had precedence because he was earlier. So now to come after the fact and say it was Shuda D'Dainai is not true. It's clear that you're just saying that because I said it. And therefore you really didn't do Shuda D'Dainai, and I'm right. The Tosafa notes over here that the Rabbeinu Hananel says that we only exercise Shuda D'Dainai in a case like Rav Nachman, who's a mumche, number one, based on what we saw here in the case, but also only in cases that involve real property, mekarke. Tosafa, on the other hand, disagrees and says that we apply Shuda D'Dainai even by cases of metaltalin, as we saw before by the shliach, who's going to take the gift, which seemingly was about metaltalin. Over there, we also saw that they exercised Shuda D'Dainai. So, the Rabbeinu Hananel might be right about the fact that you need a dayan mumche, but on the other hand, he doesn't think it's limited to real property. He thinks it applies to metaltalin as well. Hanu drei shtari, da'atu dekameid Rav Yosef. Two shtarot came before Rav Yosef. Chad avakatu b'chamsha b'nisan. One of them was dated the 5th in Nisan. The other one just has Nisan without any particular date in it. Ukmei Rav Yosef Ahu Decham Shebenisa Menichasim. Rav Yosef gave precedence to the one who had the dated shtar that said the 5th of Nisan. Am Leidach Vana Afsit. I should lose out over here. Maybe Nisan meant before the 5th of Nisan. Am Lei At Yadcha Alatachtuna. You're at the bottom here, or you have the lower claim here. Because Ema Barkatet Nisanat. Maybe you were on the 29th of Nisan. You can't bring proof to the fact that your Nisan meant before the 5th of Nisan and not after the 5th of Nisan. Since you have no evidence either way, you don't have a right here to make a definitive claim against the one who says the 5th of Nisan. Amalei, v'niftov limar tirfa, mi'yar velech. Why don't you grant me a document that says I can go after the kuchot from Iyar and onward? Because at the latest, my shtar could be dated the last day of Nisan. That means that anybody who bought property after Nisan, I'm entitled to go after because I clearly have rights over here. He sold us the property with achrayut. He sold us the property with recourse. So now the first party is not going to go after him because he got the land. Rabbi Yosef granted him the land. I didn't get it, and I have recourse here. I want to go after people who bought property after me or dated after me in terms of their taking property from this individual. So grant me at least from ER and onwards that I have a right to collect over here. Amalei yachlei lemeimalacha at barcha benisanat. So he says, no, I can't do that because the buyers of the property are going to say that you really star was before the one who had the 5th of Nisan. He took your property. You should go after him. You don't have a claim against us. You have a claim against him. So since they can push him up, you don't have a right to take away from the lukuchot. Maita kante. So how do we help this guy out? When he's going to be stuck, he'll never be able to collect. He won't be able to collect from the guy with the 5th of Nisan contract. He won't be able to collect from the kuchot who came after him. So he's going to get stuck, even though in terms of his rights, he has to be before some of these parties here. Why doesn't he have a right? Nichtavov harsha'a la'dode. What he has to do is get the contract from the 5th of Nisan guy. He says the 5th of Nisan guy basically has to grant him the contract and grant him power of attorney to go collect on his behalf. In that instance, the buyers can't say anything. He comes now with the power of his own contract and the power of the contract of the 5th of Nisan. And he says, Miman of Shach, you guys owe me property. Whether I'm collecting for myself or the 5th of Nisan, one of us came later. Since one of us came later, I have a right to take because we definitely came before you. Each one of us may not have a claim against you, but both of us together definitely have a claim against you because one of us came after and the one of us who came after is before you, the Lukuchot, and we have a right of collection. So in that case, by granting him the power of attorney, he now has the ability to collect on behalf of both of them. And there's at least one of those two that has a real claim over here against the Kuchot, and they can't push him up and say, you're the other party, because he is the party for both of them now with his power of attorney. And that's how he'll solve the problem. That's how he'll get out of the issue. Okay, we'll stop over here by the Mishnah on the top of Tzadik Hei Amud Aleph.